Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams. It's been a little bit of time since we've, done this show, but with the World Juniors, holidays, everything, I decided to take a bit of a break. But we're back with the one and only Graham Nichols of Hockey News. Should I say, and coming in hot? I don't know. Are you affiliated now?
No, I was just like the AHL call-up. That's how I joked about it on social media. Yeah, just an AHL call-up trying to fill some big shoes. And no, I appreciate Brent for asking and having me on. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to go on this week for a couple episodes. And yeah, man, happy to be back with you and talk some Senators hockey.
It's going to be a fun one, and always appreciate our chats. I always feel like it's like a mini powwow when we chat. And for people who don't know, we sit beside each other at the press box during games. So I feel like I'm just like relitigating our discussions at games. So
It's the same
it's
talking
always
points.
fun.
We're just doing it on
Exactly, for
camera.
other
Yeah.
people, but it's going to be a good one. But I guess just how do you feel like if it feels as though the season has come in waves where they had a good stretch to start the year, kind of fell apart, then went on a high, then went on a low. Like that is the ebbs and flow of a season, of course, but it really feels as though it's just been kind of like two steps forward, one step back all season. How would you evaluate this team right now?
I think that's probably fair, and I find it's maybe this is just fandom in general. I don't know if it's like unique to the Senators, but it feels like for whatever reason this fan base lives the losses and lives the highs and lows like extremely hard, and you feel it like it's just permeates when things are going really well. But you're like, oh man, like this is great, this is awesome, everything's going well, and you start thinking about the postseason and everything else, and then they'll drop a couple in a row and you're just like, oh God, this team can't score, like what's wrong with this team? And it's the true answer is like the true talent level of this team somewhere in between. There's gonna be those highs and lows, but as long as they keep finding a way to curb those like losing streaks, and like if they have a one or two game three or a three game losing streak, it's not the end of the world. It's just like you got to bounce back and go get that three game winning streak. And it's been a really tough schedule. I think that's something that we don't really discuss that often is like, well, like obviously with the World Juniors that you referenced earlier, like that's a really unique wrinkle that they've had to endure. Whereas like a lot of the other teams in the league haven't. And to play all those games on the road at that stretch around the holidays is that's tough on the players, tough on their families. And it's just it was difficult. And then you look at January, they've had like all these back-to-back games on weekends where it's like it's not even just like back-to-back home games, Alex. It's like it's you're at home one day, you're traveling the next day, and it's often two afternoon games, which is weird and it's bizarre. And the quality of competition has been tough in January as well, but like the Senators are holding their own. They captured another point last night. I'm sure we'll get into the game discussing last night's loss to Washington in overtime, but they're hanging in the mix. If they can stay in the mix and just kind of like, I hate talking about, hey, when the schedule gets easier, like the Senators are gonna bank games and lots of points and they're gonna be fine, because it's the NHL. Parity's a real thing, and you have to win games. Like there's a pressure to win games, and even though the schedule might look easier, you still have to go out and actually execute.
Yeah.
But I still think if they can get to February and they're still in this position, the opportunity is there. The opportunity is there for this team to do a lot of good things and reach the postseason, hopefully. And hopefully, you and I are along for the ride.
Yeah, the kind of problem, and we'll probably talk about it, is there's so many teams in the hunt now that have been playing so well. Like they've actually played decent hockey, but all these teams have caught up with them. But I think you're right about the schedule, and it's almost not a misnomer, but people don't realize. Like I've talked to players and I've asked them about travel. I'm sure you have as well, Graham. And I always ask guys like, what's it like to play a back-to-back? And they kind of their first instinct, they kind of almost like shrug their shoulders and like, ah, it's tough. Like it's almost like they have to run like the army run or something. Like they're just like, I'm dreading doing this, but we're gonna have to do it. And throw in the fact that this team basically traveled all across Canada and the US for about 25 days with the 9-game road trip. Now they're playing all these back-to-backs. Like they might have like the hardest schedule in the entire league, especially for an Eastern Conference team that doesn't typically travel as much as the West. So I think the fact they survived that road trip, they went 500. They lost Hallmark. Obviously, it let them find the hidden gem in Levi Marinlainen, who would have thought? But at the same time, I think they're in a pretty good spot. They can stay healthy, relatively, and I just find some goals. I think that's really what's missing. Like we've talked about it, off air. Just this team has been so much better defensively. You look at any metric, they're in the top 10 in the league in terms of shot suppression, quality of chances they give up. And it looks like it on the ice. Like, I think last night was one of their best games of the season against Washington. And obviously, they lost and they didn't score. I think Logan Thompson played really well, especially in the first two periods. The Sens could have easily had two, three goals, but they played maybe the best goaltender outside of Connor Hellebuck in the league. And that sometimes happens. But against one of the best teams in the league, they shut them down for really 2.5 periods. Even in the third, I thought they were decent when Washington made their big push. And then it's a 3-on-3 overtime, and anything can happen. So I think if they had won that game, people would be like, oh my God, they're on a 4-game winning streak. This team's so good. They just beat Washington. Obviously, they didn't. But I just, for me, the way we've talked about this, just how good they are with their sticks. Like, I think Shane Pinto has really played some really good hockey of late, alongside Ridly Greig and Nick Cousins. I think that line's been really good at just being a really good shutdown third pairing, third line with a little bit of bite and a little bit of, they've been scoring a little bit of late. So I think it's just Stützle needs to kind of, I thought he played really well. But he just needs to start producing, and same with the top line with Tkachuk and Norris and Batherson.
What would you attribute the 5-on-5 offensive struggles to? What would
That's
you
a good
say?
question.
Like, what would you just observing this team over the last several months? Like, what would you say is the
I
go?
think you, I'm not going to steal your idea first because you were the first one that brought it to it. I think this team's slow. Especially like I think for Stützle, I think it makes sense that they're putting kind of their maybe their best three forwards outside of Timmy with Tkachuk, Norris, Batherson on the line. I think they've been pretty good together. But the amount of times where you just see Stützle go in transition, carry the puck in, and just like wait for guys to catch up to him with Gaudette and Giroux on his line, or if it was Greg who was in the burner either. I just don't think they have the guys necessary in their top six to kind of just in terms of speed to kind of catch up to Stutz. Like, I remember back in the day, with Crosby, they always said like it was really hard to find line mates for him. And he's not, I'm not saying Tim Stutzla is exactly Sidney Crosby, but there's a little bit of that, like, you need a guy to know where to go to be quick enough to play with a guy like Crosby or a guy like Tim Stützle, and I feel like they just don't have that guy outside of Tkachuk. And I think Norris by himself, we've talked about this, is just not a play driver. I think he's actually played really well this year. I think defensively, his metrics aren't great, but for me, the eye test shows a really competitive. He's hitting anything. I think he's feisty. I think he's had a really good season. He's on pace for close to 30 goals. Like, that's good for a second line center, but I just think he needs guys like Batherson and Tkachuk to pull their weight to create plays. So
Yeah, I was kind of intrigued that like Travis Green got away from Norris on the wing. I thought that was going to be an experiment they might consider for just like a longer period of time because I think you're bang on. Like I think like Josh Norris, like smart player, like bright guy when you talk to him, has obviously like skills. Like I think like he's like 90th percentile on a lot of the skating metrics using like NHL Edge data. Like he's very fast, he's quick in bursts. There's a lot of tools and skills that he brings to the table, and I think it's just a matter of sitting down and saying, okay, like how do we unlock this guy's potential to the maximum? And I think if you recognize that he is a shooter, and he needs guys to create space for him on the ice where he can kind of get lost in coverage and do a lot of things, maybe you put him with a guy like Timmy who's playing with line mates who aren't necessarily the fastest. Like Adam Gaudette is not a burner. Closure at this stage of his career is not a burner. And like how often have you seen Timmy go into the offensive zone with possession off a clean entry and he cycles around the back of the net because nobody's skating with him. Like they're not, he's creating time for these guys to get in like offensive positions, and like he'll cycle the on like almost like the entire offensive zone waiting for these guys to catch up. And like I don't know if it makes sense to put like your two fastest forwards on the same line, like if you want to use Norris in an extended viewing on a line with Timmy. But I think we've talked about this before on the show and stuff. I think like Tim's a driver. Tim can win a shift on his own. I think Brady Tkachuk is another guy who does so much work down low, controlling the puck, cycling the puck. He's another guy who can drive his own line based off his own skill set. And I think like you have to find ways to complement those players with the right guys. Like, and I think with Norris, he's a guy who needs that perfect complement to like bring out the best of him at 5-on-5. And I don't know, like he's had a lot of historically, like he's had a lot of success playing with Brady before, and maybe that's something that they'll continue to do. But like, I think based off the need for a top six goal scorer, maybe Josh Norris is a solution to that if you play him with Timmy, as opposed to like going external. And then obviously you can slide Shane Pinto with Brady, where he's had a little bit of success in a small sample size. And then you can play Ridly Greig at center, and maybe that's something they'll look at down the stretch. But I think they've got some good problems to have. I think there's enough talent up front where they can try and find solutions internally before having to go out and pay like exorbitant prices for some of the guys who may potentially be available. But given the congestions and the standings, the few teams that are out of it, I think like the prices might be sky high. So maybe it's better to look internally before doing something where you might wind up paying more in terms of draft capital assets than you originally wanted to.
I think what's interesting is with just on that discussion is early in the year, like Brady, Timmy were on pace for like 190 points. They were playing together. The problem was Nor Josh Norris. He was actually producing a little bit, but the line was getting caved in. Analytically, they weren't good. Typically, if he was playing with Giroux and Batherson, or like just Norris could not find a second line that was effective, right? And they're just missing one player, I really think, in that top six to just round it out. I think Giroux can still be a top six player. It just, I think you need two at least above average skaters with him.
Yeah, Giroux. I was looking at. I think he's got like one goal, or sorry, he's got two goals, but one was an empty netter. And I think it's like two goals in his last like 19 games or something, and one's an empty netter. It's like, well, you absolutely like he's put up some assists and stuff as well, but like, I just from a goal scoring perspective, like that's a guy you need from. I know like Drake Batherson's having a more difficult time right now. Like those are the guys you're hoping to pick up the slack when guys like Timmy and Brady aren't scoring goals. But like they just need more. They just need like that extra little bit more from those guys. And now obviously like Adam Gaudette's gone cold, even though he had a goal the other night against the Islanders. They just need a little bit more depth scoring. And
What's interesting is like they put Pinto back on the third line after playing on the first line. I thought he did pretty well with Greig and Tkachuk as a first line analytics. They're very good. But their third line kind of squandered, right? And so that's kind of the problem. If you put Norris on the wing, then it's not that I don't mind Greig as a third line center, but
right.
how effective is that line, right?
Yeah. But I think like the other thing you have to consider with that, Alex, is like you got to recognize like Michael Amadio just returned last night. David Perron just shed his non-contact jersey. Like I don't know if he's going to play this weekend. Ottawa's got two games, Saturday in Boston. And then where are they going to Sunday? Is it New Jersey? I
New
think it's New
Jersey, yeah.
Jersey. Yeah. So if those guys were returning, like arguably the Pinto, Perron, and
Amadio line.
Amadio line was like probably the team's most effective in the early goings, especially through like training camp.
But they
There
couldn't
was
score.
no, but I mean, like, if enough good stuff happens consistently, eventually the odds say like, okay, eventually a few will start to go in, and you
No.
build off that. But I think like, we haven't talked about Steve Stavros's availability yet, but like when you were at that availability, listening to him speak, what were your impressions? Like, what were your impressions of like, do you envision him based off what he said, which isn't really much? You're kind of trying to read the tea leaves a little bit, but like, he's notorious for not really tipping his hat, but using a lot of words not to like really reveal
I
anything.
think all of like Sens Media after the Steve Stavros presser when they talked, I think Kyle said on 32. I think Ewan and Wally said, like, yeah, he's great at being polite. He's very respectful, but he will not, he just gives you gobbledygook. Like, he doesn't really say anything. I
Bless
think.
Lisa Wallace for trying to get some more information.
I
She's
know.
kind of going at him a little bit just to get more, press him on
Like,
some
what does
information
that
regarding the
mean?
injuries. And
I do. I think the steady Steve moniker for the most part is probably the right way to read him. And, you know.
so do you anticipate them? So, like, me listening to it personally, like, I thought, okay, this is a guy who basically he's talking about the congestion in the standings, which means high market prices. He's talking about giving eternal looks to guys like Matt and Paolo, which, I mean, is kind of out of necessity because teams aren't really looking to sell, like, at this halfway point in the season. They're not looking to sell rentals yet. To me, it sounded like a guy who is looking to work on the margins as opposed to, like, making a big splashy trade. And then given the team's cap situation, like, they're pressed up against the cap ceiling. I don't anticipate them going out and getting, like, a big ticket item, just because if they do, someone's going out the door. So would you echo that, or how would you feel? Like, how did you feel, like, listening to it?
I would definitely agree with that sentiment and that how you read the room and what he said, in my opinion. Like, you know, what was interesting when he acquired Allmark is in the summer, is he said he tried to get him at the trade deadline last year. And that was really interesting to me, where, you know, he did make a bold move. He has, you know, made a big trade with Chychrun, which I think, you know, will probably be out in my story later today, about how it's kind of worked for both sides. So I think there is an impetus where if it makes sense, he will make a bold move. So if, let's say, in a month from now, with the schedule turning, maybe some health coming back, they go on a nice little run, they're solidified in a playoff spot, I could see him making a bigger move to kind of give this team a jolt to maybe make a, you know, win a round or two, which would be unbelievable.
Okay,
But
so put your GM hat on. How are you facilitating a trade of that nature? How are you cleaning up the cap? How are you doing that?
I think it's weird because now I have to go in the room. But the one guy that I would trade if it made sense, just cap wise, would be Perron. Just if you're making a huge move, I don't think he has like poor value on the market, but he's 4 million for this year, next. He's still a good player. I don't think it's like a complete cap dump, or you'll have to like pay, you know, an exorbitant price to get off of that contract or anything. I think it's pretty fair market value. He's been banged up, so you're not gonna, you know, if he had 10 goals and 20 points in 40 some games, obviously he would, you know, maybe you wouldn't want to trade him, but
He
that
does
might
have a
be.
modified no trade.
Does he have a modified? Oh, okay.
Yep.
I didn't even know that. So maybe not Perron, but I don't think you trade Amadio or anything like that. Like, they're gonna accrue cap space because they don't have anyone in LTIR. So
Shouldn't the answer be Anton Forsberg? Just dump that contract? I
I
mean,
don't
they can
think.
clear, they can get $1 million off the books just by putting
I
him in the
think
minors.
that's what will happen whenever Allmark comes back, is they're gonna just either waive him or trade him. And I don't think if they're able to trade him for any, like, even just for like future considerations.
Yeah, Pierre LeBrun had Carolina linked to Forsberg in December, like early December, but, I mean, that's
But
before his, I think
he's
that was before his injury and then some
40.
inconsistencies since. So I
Yeah,
don't know, but, like, Carolina is also desperate for a goaltender too, just
they
based off
are,
some of the injury
and
problems that they've
they
had.
are just like they're the biggest goalie turnstile, right? Just pick up guys, see if it works. I think it's the right way to go about it if you don't have that number one. The problem is they've never found that guy who's like
Yeah.
a legit stone cold,
Yeah.
you know, elite
And I
goalie.
think the problem is, if you do dump Forsberg, you have to go back out and find another veteran to probably just stash at the AHL level in
Yeah.
hopes that, like, if something ever happened to Allmark again, or Levy, like, there has to be someone you can, like, kind of just put in and not embarrass themselves.
I think the Marilainen, just his breakout, has been such a blessing for this franchise, because like I wrote about it when Allmark was out week to week, that this team should acquire a goaltender. And you know,
That was your
Marilainen,
John Gibson pitch, wasn't it?
yeah, it was. And I mean, now you wouldn't, right? But I mean,
How are you going to fit that guy's cap hit in?
Eat it, eat it.
Yeah.
And give them Forsberg. It actually would have made sense with Forsberg going the other way, but that's another story. But my point being is that like he's been, miraculous, and he gives Steos room, like kind of time to be even more patient. So I think, and they're back in the hunt, like they haven't fallen out of it. Obviously because he just doesn't allow goals unless it's an overtime, it seems like. So it's going to be interesting. I don't expect a big move. I think this summer will be interesting though, but I think
So,
the
okay.
Ryan
So
Donato type player, like just the guy playing
let's just
well,
say, Alex, let's just say hypothetically, let's just say you clear like a $2.75 million cap hit off the books. Let's say Forsberg, for whatever reason, some team just takes that contract on. You have that kind of money to acquire one player. What position are you addressing on the Senators roster? Are you getting that top six forward or like a forward that like a depth forward, maybe like a Taylor Hall, if like Chicago absorbs like that salary? Or is it like, you know what? Ottawa's third pairing right defense has been an issue all season at during for like significant stretches or for
Taylor
some
Hall.
stretches. I think like Jacob Bernard Docker's had some good stretches of good hockey. I think Matt Impala has been okay, and
Been
fine in the limited sample that we've seen. But like I don't think you want Travis Hamonic playing regularly as your third pairing guy. I think like I think
Oh,
the
it's
time's kind of, I think there's enough statistical evidence and eye test data, and there's enough quantitative and qualitative analysis to say, you know what, like this, the team's better when he's not in the lineup. And that's not a slight to him.
no, it's.
I'm not trying to pick on him or anything, but like, I think that's just the cold hard reality of the situation, right?
If Travis Hamonic is playing, like I think Matt Dumbello has been better than Hamonic with Cleven. Hamonic and Cleven, if you look at their numbers, have been awful this year. Cleven and Matt Dumbello have held their own a little bit. They haven't been great, but they, I mean, Cleven, I think, has been playing really well. I thought he played pretty well last night with Jensen, and before last night's game, their underlines, whenever they were on the ice together, weren't very good. But I think it's Taylor Hall to the moon. I think he'd actually be the perfect player if you can get maybe a second round pick for him. They eat half the salary in Chicago just because he's skilled, he's fast. I think he'd be great alongside Tim Stützle. He's not a great defensive player, but I think you have enough. If you put Giroux on that line, you have like two guys that are decently defensively responsible. That's the perfect guy for me. And I think, you look at their defense, and yeah, it's not an oil painting, it's not beautiful, but Jake Sanderson and Artem Zub are playing outstanding hockey right now. I think that's like a shutdown. Like, you have your number one pair. Jensen and Chabot have been playing really well all season. And then you figure out the bottom pair, and every team has warts. You're not going to be perfect, but Tyler Cleven's playing good hockey. So, in my opinion, sure, you can add. I think the really good teams that go on playoff runs are just adding depth defensemen just for injuries. And you see, like, random guys playing in the Stanley Cup finals that you would have never thought just because teams are banged up. But I think this team needs to score. They're 24th in goals, they're 7th in goals against. They're doing fine with the defense that they have right now. They just need to score more. And I think you need a top six, or at least like a middle six addition to the lineup more than anything else.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious. Like, we haven't had large samples of data where, or long periods of time where, like, both Jake Sanderson and Thomas Chabot were playing well. Like, that's just something that we haven't had for long stretches this season. Obviously, Sanderson came back, or sorry, Sanderson, Zub came back to be paired with Sanderson after Zub returned from his concussion. But that was only like what, like a nine game sample, 8 game sample before he sustained a foot fracture and then was gone again. So I wonder how much of the offensive struggles are just solely from the fact that like this team's top four has been kind of disjointed for long stretches of the season. I like, if Zub's healthy, because I think the further removed Zub gets from that concussion, like there's a noticeable difference in his play this go around from like the previous one, and he looks like the player of old. And like you said, him and Sanderson have looked fantastic during this recent stretch, but I just wonder from an impact perspective, like how much better this team's goal differential and goal scoring output would be if Sanderson and Shabbat were both healthy, productive, and playing their best hockey. And that just hasn't happened for long stretches this season.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it is true, but like every team gets banged up too. So it's
For
like,
sure, but I mean, like 5-on-5 offense starts with your starts with your starts from the back. Starts from the back and goes out, right? So if
I
you're not
think in
moving the
the
puck, if you're not moving the puck efficiently, it affects your breakouts, it affects your entries, it affects like a lot of play. Like if your guys are just flat footed in the neutral zone waiting for passes that just are never arriving, it puts the team on its heels pretty quickly.
I feel like this is just how hockey works in an 82-game season, but I was thinking about it earlier today, like how it's never felt really at all season, except maybe a stretch early on where everything was working kind of at the same time, right? Like to begin the year, they could score. They won that game 8-7. I think they beat Tampa 5-4. They were scoring a lot of goals. They beat St. Louis
St.
8-1.
Louis, yeah.
Yep, their power play was humming. Their PK wasn't great, but their goaltending was awful, to be honest. And so like, but they found a way to be 500, right? And then their goaltending got better, but they couldn't score. But they were still kind of winning games 3-2, and they went on a bit of a slide because their goaltending took a dip. And their power play was still humming, but 5-on-5, they weren't generating much. And then they start generating a bit more at 5-on-5, but their PK gets woeful, their power play gets, starts getting a bit colder, their goaltending, Allmark gets hurt. Like it really hasn't felt as though at any point in the season where like everything was humming for like a 10-game stretch. And it will never be that way for sure, but it always feels like right now, like they're playing excellent defensive hockey, but they cannot score goals, right? And so it's like it's just really perplexing, right? Where I thought they've played pretty well. I still think it's hard for them to get like inner slot chances. And if it never really felt like outside maybe
Which
Villa.
seems bizarre because they have Brady Tkachuk on the roster, right? Like, which is
I know.
what he's
And
renowned for. Like,
he hasn't.
he is a high volume guy at the net front, and it is kind of crazy that, like, yeah, this team should be generating more than it has been in that situation, but.
And he's slowed down. Like he hasn't been producing that much of late. He hasn't been scoring that much. And I mean, I think the whole team hasn't. So I'm not gonna say like, oh my God, Brady Tkachuk is letting this team down. Like Batherson didn't score on the 9-game road trip. Like all these guys. So last night I kind of asked Green. Like he was really happy with his team's play. He's like it's kind of bittersweet. I don't think he said bittersweet, but that was basically what he was conveying. But I asked him, I was like, you played well, but you're not scoring. Like, what can you do? Like, do you feel he's like, well, against New York, it really felt like we had, I think, 18 high danger chances. I think we're playing pretty good. It's just not going in. And I think some of that is true. Like, I don't think in the last two games they should have had one goal from, outside of an empty netter. Like, I think they played better than just getting one goal. At the same time, they don't feel too threatening, and when your power play starts getting cold, as we kind of talked off air, it's a recipe for, not a lot of goals.
It feels like when's the last maybe it's just Timmy's goal where he pulled it from like underneath Jerry and scored into the net against Pittsburgh, but like there's just not a lot of greasy goals. Like I can't think of like many instances where this team hasn't had to work hard for everything that they've gotten. Like it seems like every goal is like it's the culmination of like some great passing plays, and it's like a lot of hard work that generates it, which is great. But it just feels like there's not a lot of luck. There hasn't been a lot of lucky bounces or goals. It feels like they work hard for everything that they get.
The one thing, and you kind of talked about Shabbat and Sanderson, not playing well at the same time, or never really overlapping in terms of playing very good hockey at the same time. I really don't like how this defense corps throws shots at the on goal. Like it always like even last night they probably had 4 to 5. I can think of Cleven, Jensen had one or two, Sanderson as well, where they just throw a shot from the point with no traffic on net, and Thompson ends, and they were generating like good cycle play and in ozone time. And I don't like, it's hockey, it's so quick out there. I don't I would look crazy out there on the ice, just how bad I would be. But a part of me just wants them to like hold on to the puck, wait for guys to come in front, screen the goaltender, create chaos, go from there. And it feels like this blue line just doesn't have that maybe aptitude to launch shots at the right time. And they're last in goals four from defense from last time I checked.
Which is interesting because if you look at like the team's 5-on-5 like heat maps on like hockeyviz.com, for example, like you can see like a lot of pucks are coming from like the wall at the point from both sides of the point. And then there's a lot of shots coming from the middle of the blue line as well. Like they're I think that they do a good job of cycling, creating like chances and putting teams on their heels. But I think like when they throw it back to the point a lot of times, whether it's at the end of a shift or whatnot, the defensemen are just they'll throw it on net, and eventually they're like it does like from time to time to work out in terms of a tip goal. Like we saw Gaudette score against the Islanders like that, off a Cleven shot. But like it's just not happening with that kind of consistency. They're not getting rebounds, shots are getting blocked, or they're just harmless, like you said. And a goalie just catches the puck, absorbs all rebounds, and then it's a whistle, and you're giving a reprieve to the defensive team. So.
And that's why, like, I think some of the people in the media corps, even on Twitter and stuff, like, think I'm like the biggest like Carter Yakimchuk apologist. But like, that's the one thing that, I asked Stay, I was like, how close do you think Yakimchuk is? And he kind of talked about, well, his same old. And I'm not besmirching Stay. He just it's fair that he doesn't want to answer the question. It is what it is. But just like, yeah, we'll see, like we'll evaluate, we're constantly evaluating, whatever. But the one thing Yakimchuk has is he has a great shot, it's great poise on the point, and he has just a knack for knowing when to, like, just the offensive reads of a defenseman that I don't think anyone, even Shabbat, I don't really think has it to that extent, right? And he'd
It's
be
weird. It's weird because I thought like Sanderson had moments of that, like in the preseason, the first couple games of the season, and then it's just like, I in terms of just like he's a player who can give this team so much more than he has, and there's like there's those elements that he has that he can bring out a little bit more often, and it just for whatever reason it just hasn't happened.
I mean, if you read some of my stories with Sanderson and talking to him, he's very upfront. Like he'll say, like, I don't think I'm gonna win a Norris because, like, I don't think I'll put up the offensive numbers. And he really prioritizes his defensive game, and I think that's is what has got him to where he is. Is I think one of the best defensive defensemen in the league. But I think you're right. In preseason, he just showed much more poise. The hot start to the season, I think he had 6 points in his first five games. They're all mostly on the power play, but it just felt as though he was generating just way more chances, way more creative than he has in the past. And then it kind of has just snowballed. And I think he's regained himself a little bit of late, but even then, it doesn't feel like if he has the puck on the point, I'm not like, oh, he's going to make a play, slide down, create a really good chance or opportunity. It feels like he's going to pass it down to the wall or launch a puck, and it won't really be like a high quality chance from it. And I just wish he just had a little bit of that like offensive nous, or I don't know what the right word is, to just be creative, to read the right play, to know when to shoot, when not to. But he's still young. Like I'm still like super high on him. I still think if he can become just a bit better offensively, he can be a top five defenseman in the league for a long, long time.
Yeah, I think like Erik Karlsson was phenomenal at it. Even Erik Branstrom to a certain extent. Like those guys have found ways of feathering pucks through traffic and putting shots on goal to get like rebounds, rebound creation. I feel like there just hasn't been enough of that from a Senators perspective. Like they need more traffic. They need like lower shots to throw off the pads of the goalie and just create like second opportunities. Like it feels like there haven't been enough rebound goals. You know, it's just there needs to be like those second, third chance scoring opportunities where, it seems like every time Ottawa scores, it's off like a beautiful one, like individual play or just a one off.
Yeah, and that's why I'm like, if Yakimchuk is playing well, like, bring him up. But that's another story. But honestly,
They can't bring him up till the season's over.
yeah, that's true. But playoff baby, we're gonna do like a
I don't know, because like Calgary loaded up, man. Like, They
They
they're
showed up.
making a huge push in
Yeah.
the
He's like on
WHL.
video and
Yeah, they got a bunch of guys.
they're a good
They
team.
were active. They
Yeah.
probably recognize that he's not coming back next year. Maybe that's part of it.
There you go. I don't mind that. Like, I think this blue line moving forward is in a really good spot. It'll be interesting to see, but that's we'll have that discussion maybe in the off season. But yeah, I think, you know, give Travis Green a lot of credit. Like, he talked about habits, and the whole training camp was about instilling these defensive principles. And it felt like the first month or two, and really when they started sliding, when they lost that game to Vancouver, and there was the boos, and then there was the Brady Tkachuk rumors and all that, you could just see, like, oh no, like the old habits are coming back, right? And being just not that composed and tight checking games and losing their cool, like all the things that this team was bereft of in the past, right? Especially last year. But you know, I think with Allmark playing well, getting a big confidence, that 6-game winning streak, you can just see, like, I felt like last night against Washington was like almost proof of concept. It was like, okay, we're playing a good team. You know, we're missing one of our best defensemen. You know, we still have a couple injuries on the offensive, you know, on the forward group. And we're tired. You know, we play back to back this weekend, whatever. And they played a really good defensive game. I think they've just shown themselves to be such a good defensive team. And that was all this, you know, the fan base wanted, Steve Staios wanted. And it's ironic that now it's like, okay, but score, right?
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I thought their game against Dallas was probably one of their best of the season. And I think, like, just talking to you about defensive structure and everything, I think, like, in years past, they get down 1-0, they get through the first period. That's a game that could have got away from them in the past, like past previous years, where it's like discipline structure goes out the window, the guys start cheating for offense to get that one goal, erase that deficit. And I think, like, one of the things that I think you have to give a lot of credit to the coaching staff for there is instilling this discipline and structure that the players are not wavering from, irrespective of what the score is. They get the lead in the third period against Dallas. They just shut it down. Like, Dallas didn't get much except for that power play goal at the end of the third period to bring it one within one goal. But, like, from the beginning of the first period through the end of that Dallas game, like, that the Senators played their structure, irrespective of what the score was. Ottawa played to their structure and just took it to Dallas, took it to a really good, really good Dallas team. And against the Islanders, it was the same thing. It was just like tight checking game. They just stuck with it. After the first goal was disallowed, you're like, oh God, here we go. Here we go.
Gonna
You're
be
waiting for the
3-1
shooter drop.
Islanders
Yeah,
on
you're waiting for the shooter
Barzal scoring
drop,
the
and
power
then
play.
they just stuck with it. And then next thing you know, game's over. Ottawa walks away, wins it. And again, against like a very good Washington team last night, like just took away the middle of the ice for like large stretches of that game and didn't give Washington, like, short man, like Thomas Chabot, arguably like their most valuable player this season, didn't play a minute last night and didn't miss a beat. Like, everybody kind of, they played to them, they stuck within themselves, played to the structure, and then held Washington to very few chances during 5-on-5 throughout the 60 minutes. And it's encouraging. It's like, I think once you recognize and acknowledge that, like, that kind of level of performance can happen on a consistent basis, it's then I think that's when you can start saying, okay, how do we get more offense? How do we coach more offense into this group? And I guess that's probably the question that Travis and the staff are asking themselves right now.
Do you want to do the Lovie Mara line? We haven't really talked about him too much. Like,
I don't even want to talk about Levy, man, because I'm kicking myself every time he has a good game, because this goes back to like that break in December where it's like the team came back for one practice at the Bell Centsplex, and I asked for Levi Mäkiläinen right away because he got his first win in Vancouver, and I'm just like, I thought based off who was on the ice, it was him and Søgaard. I'm like, Levi's gonna probably be the guy. He won, they'll give him an opportunity. And then Mads Søgaard was one of the other goaltenders who was asked for an availability at that time, and I'm like, wow, it's weird that, like, I don't know who asked for him, but I'm like, oh, maybe they know
it was
something that I
me.
don't.
It wasn't me.
Oh, okay. But like
It wasn't me.
whoever it was, like, I'm like, oh, maybe they know something about like the pecking order or something more than I do. So I just wasn't thinking about it. And then Mads comes in, does his interview, and I'm like, okay. And then Sly comes in. He's like, Levy's ready if anybody wants to talk to him. And in my head, I'm like, nobody else wants to talk to the guy whose prop might, like, I thought would have a chance to be the goaltender. And instead of just sticking with him and be like, well, I'll still talk to him, it's like, well, if nobody else wants to talk to him, I don't want to waste his time. And you know, if nobody else wants to scrum with him, then, but and now it's just like kicking myself because now everybody wants to talk to him, you know, whereas like I could have had that exclusive kind of story early on. Now it's just like, shit, I screwed up. So I'm learning lessons. My first year doing it,
It's
I'm learning
okay. I mean,
lessons as I
I've done
go,
that
and
too.
I'm just like, I'm kicking myself over, you know, I could have, even like the other day, man, like same thing. Like he was just sitting on the, he was sitting in the dressing room by himself, and I went over and congratulated him on his like on his first win, you know, returning from home and our first shutout, and nobody else was talking to him. Had a moment where I could have easily just grabbed the
You know
interview.
what's interesting, and I haven't said this because I think my story will air by the time, by the time this goes out as well. But last night, guess who went up to Levi Mäenpää in the locker room? Linus Ullmark. It was
Oh,
interesting. He walked in. He looked like a not a Bond villain, but he just was like wearing like a pea coat and like he grew out his beard. He just looked like a Danish or not Danish, Swedish. Like I don't know. It felt like I was watching like a Nordic movie. Anyways,
he's a well-dressed man.
he is a
He's
well-dressed man. So he came up and they started chatting and it I kind of looked over because I was in a scrum. I forget who was scrumming. And I looked over and Marilyn almost looked like I haven't really talked to you ever. Like it was like, oh, like nice to kind of meet you. And I kind of it, I don't know, that moment just almost felt like not a passing of the torch, but it's like here's the next like 3 4 years, like you know, kind of encapsulated in those two kind of meeting together.
And that's like just like projecting forward. I think like if you're gonna say comfortably like watching Marilyn play, I don't know, maybe you feel the same way. I'm sure you probably do. It's like you watch him play, and I feel like this isn't just like a ridiculous heater that's like obviously the numbers are like incredibly strong and stuff, but I feel like watching him play, he's in control of the elements essentially. Like he's suppressing rebounds, he's absorbing the puck really well. His glove hand's been fantastic. He's finding pucks through traffic. And I feel like he's not, I don't feel like this is fluky. Whereas like, you know, like an Andrew Hammond run where everything is breaking right and everything's going well, you recognize like this is a once in a lifetime run that you'll never ever see again. But at least with Levy, I feel like based off what he's doing, like stylistically, athletically, and everything else, it feels like even if the numbers might normalize a little bit, like this feels like he is a guy who can definitely play at this level and perform at a high enough level to give this team quality backup goaltending
You don't think
at the very least.
you don't think he'll be a career 930?
No. Well, I mean, who is a career 930?
Maybe Carey Price, but I'm kidding.
But
No,
if they could
I
sign him, like if they could sign him to a modest deal, like a 2 or 3 year deal, and they save a few million dollars doing it. It saves them from having to go externally to find that option, right? It saves them from
Oh,
having to
it's
spend
such
money
a
on a veteran
like
option.
if
It's
this is,
it creates huge flexibility for them to address other needs on the roster.
and I would agree, like you know, maybe for people that don't know, I'm also a psychotherapist. That's my other job. But for me, you know, they all talk about like how calm and cool, and like they always say that about goalies. But like he just even seeing him like very chill, very calm, not you know he does, you know sometimes you'll see goalies, and I won't say who, but they're really in their mind. Like you know, some of that is just to be focused all the time, right? Like you know, I don't know how I'd be a goalie. I would always be like thinking about like I don't know why is Sparta Cat eating someone on the Jumbotron like during a game. You know, like I would probably lose my focus, right? But
That's
he,
the
yeah, well, I'm
ADHD
not diagnosed,
kicking in.
but I just mean that like you know there's some goalies where you can tell it's really in their head and it's a tough you know job outside of the millions of dollars but with him just the poise like I was talking to Pinto yesterday he's like for being that calm at 22 like it's something crazy like I've never really seen that before and I think just the fact that he has that mental makeup you know I talked to Justin Peters the goalie coach. And he was talking about how like calm and relaxed he just always is, and I think that's what you want from your goaltender. And I think you know it was interesting. He talked about how, as you said, he has all the tools. He has the athleticism, But it was just about developing just basically like the good habits of not being too aggressive, not trying to just like use your athleticism just because, and becoming much more square and all that. And you see it, like he's an athletic goalie, but he doesn't play like he is one in a sense, and I think in a good way,
Yeah.
right? Kind of like Allmark too. Like he's pretty athletic. It's just, but he
You
doesn't.
don't have to see it if you're always square and you're doing what you should to not put yourself in those situations, right?
And then you have the mental makeup where, they score a goal. I think, I thought about, you never know how, if it's like a, as I would say, like a TSN turning point. But when Jason Robertson scored that first goal against them in Dallas, it was like, oh, it almost felt like a bit of like a balloon pop. Like, okay, here we go. Like, it's gonna come back to earth. And he was fine the rest of the game. He gave up a goal late, but like, he was excellent. Didn't really lose his cool, made some good saves later in that first period, and just kind of kept them in the game, and then they rebounded, right?
Oh, and
And
that's it's vital. Like, if you can get 900 or better goaltending out of your backup position, like you're putting yourself in a good spot. I think with Forsberg, that obviously hasn't happened this year. I mean, there's been so many instances where like he's let in deflating goals, and he just hasn't been competitive enough to give this team a chance to win because they aren't scoring goals. And if Marlon can keep games, like if he allows one, two, three goals a game, at least Ottawa's got a chance to win every night.
exactly. And they're right there. I just checked, like they're 11th in save percentage. I mean, it's only 900. It's crazy how much save percentage has gone down has gone down this year. But
Teams are chasing quality, man. It's like it's not just Ottawa. Like you could see it with Ottawa. Like they are chasing quality as much as they can, as opposed to just like quantity. But
but you know what's
it's
interesting is
just
this year when goal like save percentage has gone down, goals has gone down too. So I find that like a bit of a conundrum where it's like, well, yeah,
probably
people.
because you're spending more time. Probably because you're spending more time chasing quality, right? Like it's more puck management as
Like the
opposed to
football
just like.
theory where it's like run more just so you don't give the opposition as much time to have as many possessions, right?
Keep the defense on the field and keep them tired. Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
no, it's interesting, but maybe moving. I want to talk about Sabrango too, just quickly, just because I think that's a really cool story. I texted her mom a little, or his mom, sorry, and apparently he had like 35 kids from his like local school come to the game, which is really cool and
Well, he was
heart.
a hockey academy guy, wasn't he? Like he was like the one at Hawkesbury. Yeah, so I think they took a bus or something to just come watch him play.
So and like the
It's a
mom
cool.
crying, and there's the picture of him wearing like the Daniel Alfredson like 1,000 games, and I don't know, it's a cool story. He was. Even after the game, you could just see the jubilation, the excitement, just on his face. And he played pretty well. Like it's another, a Pierre Dorion win, in the DeBrincat trade, I'm kind of being a bit facetious, but, good for him. It's just a cool story to, play for your hometown team. Like I remember always thinking of playing for the Sens, and this is, I could only get in the room, just not with the skates on, but, it is what it is, but
Next best thing you're writing about the Sens.
yeah. I would take the millions of dollars as a number one shutdown defenseman, but that's okay. That's okay. Is there anything else about the Sens like that you kind of hot topic or anything?
No, I like I think they set themselves up well. Obviously, they get like the Four Nations tournament is coming up in February, so like Ottawa will get a few more weeks to like rest their guys and get healthy and stuff. So like I think the biggest thing, I think the biggest issue for the team is just to like they haven't really had their full lineup healthy at the same time all year. And I think if they can get everybody back on the ice, I mean, like if is a lineup ever fully healthy at any point during the season? Probably not. But like if you can get to the closest version of that sooner, I think it's gonna be it's that's just to get like a true valuation of how the Senators are, I think that'll be important.
One last thought experiment. I'm gonna, and it's not even a thought experiment. If Perron comes back, presuming no one gets injured, what's your top three lines, even four lines? Like, what do you think the best iteration of the four?
I'd have Cousins playing fourth line minutes. I think like just in an energy role, I think that would be best. I think he's played very well in his third line minutes and stuff, but I think like he's a guy that you want on your fourth line. And if like I think if you can put him as like your fourth line left winger, keep Noah Gregor out of the lineup, that's a win. I think Ostapchuk is going to be your fourth line center. I think, whether it's Greg or Pinto as your third line guy, I think that's where it goes. But I think you want Perron and Matteo on the third line, and I think that's when you just kind of have to mix and match your top six and decide what you're going to do. And I don't know, like I feel like with Gaudette, I think like that's another great story for like the first half of the year. It's a win. Super happy for a guy to like produce at that level and get chances and stuff. But I think like had he not scored against the Islanders, like you're talking about a guy who hasn't scored in almost 20 games.
He's in your top six.
And he's in your top six. And like if he's not scoring, he's not a quick skater, he's not a great forechecker, he's not a great like he can defend a little bit, but he's not an all-star defender by any stretch. He's not an exceptional two-way player. And I think that's probably like a limitation of his skating ability. But like if you can upgrade Gaudette at some point in your top six, I think that would be a huge win. I think if you upgrade your third pairing right defense, that'd be a huge win. And I'm just curious, like I'm really curious to see how Steve Staios kind of like moves forward with this group towards the deadline, because there's some very obvious holes on the roster that they could upgrade. It's just, is he willing to pay a price to do it? And what, and just in terms of a pure valuation perspective, will he be able to find the right fits? And I think like looking back to last offseason, you mentioned the Chychrun trade earlier with Nick Jansen. I think people bemoan that trade a little bit because the opportunity cost that Ottawa gave up to get Chychrun in the fold, like a high draft pick, and there's a lot of value in that. But I think like this organization's done a really good job of identifying fits as opposed to just like chasing names and what have you. So I'm kind of curious to see how how Sean Tierney identifies players that the Senators could target, how Steve Staios can go out and acquire these players, hopefully at a lower rate than what other players on the market might get. And I'm just curious to see how it moves forward, because like we haven't really seen him put his stamp on a team midseason. We've seen those offseason trades. You mentioned Ullmark earlier and the chicken trade for Jensen, but like we haven't seen a move in season to kind of bolster things a little bit. So I'm kind of curious to see how he does it.
The thing that I think will help him is they have all these third round picks. And obviously, a third round pick is not worth the same as a second or first, of course, but that can get you something. Like, that can get you a player of value, if, whether it be another, a bottom, if you need a guy on your bottom pair, or if you want a middle six forward, if you trade 2 third round picks, like, you can get, like, I don't know, Ryan Donato. I'm just throwing out a name who's played pretty well this year. Is he perfect? No. Is he the right player? I don't know. But, like, you can get a player for, like, decent value for 2 or 3, third round picks, and like you're not breaking the farm system by trading excess third round picks to make a little run. Like I think.
So here's the question for you, because like Scott Wheeler for The Athletic just published his organizational rankings of draft systems or farm systems or what have you. Ottawa was 27th. With the exception of like Carter Yakimchuk, they do not have a blue chip prospect.
Blake Montgomery is making.
Yeah, sorry, like he's
Crazy.
playing very well. He's playing
But
very
yeah,
well. He's doing
you're
really well
right.
already.
That is
But
a
like I
that's a good
like
story, but yes.
you know, like yeah, it's a great developmental story. But if you want to address a position of need, like are you a little bit more apprehensive about moving draft capital out because you have a farm system that's not
Not
deep or that talented? Because like teams of that ilk that are ranked that poorly in the organizational rankings, they're all Stanley Cup contenders. Like Ottawa's kind of like the black sheep in that crowd, where it's like this team's been rebuilding for 8 years. They should have way more in the pipeline than they do, but because of some poor trades and poor management,
say it about
they
the
just
guy in the
don't.
press box row. What? No, I mean, I think trading a first round pick would be, unless it's a long term play, especially with the Dadonov thing. I still think they'll probably get their pick next year, but to be determined.
I could see them getting like the New Jersey thing, where like New Jersey got punished, where like Kovalchuk and then be like, okay, fine, we'll give you a first round pick, but it's gonna be the last pick of the draft. You
And
can't.
you can't trade it,
Yeah,
yeah.
you can't move it or do anything with
But
it. You have to take it.
overall, I think you have a bunch of third round picks. Those are obviously valuable, but you're not, if you trade, I think they have 5 third round picks in the next 2 years, if I'm not mistaken. If you trade 2 and you still have 3 in the next, like, I don't think that if you're trading all your second round picks, all your first round picks, sure. But I think that's the thing where Steos got 2/3 for Tarasenko. He got a third in the Jensen Chychrun trade. Like he has a bit in his back pocket to use to make a little run, but not, completely deplete the farm system moving forward. And I think their drafting so far has been interesting, to say the least. They clearly like size. But overall, I'm fine with it, but they don't have a second next year. They don't have any extra seconds down the road. So I think those third round picks are what you use, and maybe use a second round pick if you feel like you can get Taylor Hall in the building and it's a big play. But I think the third round picks is use them for a middle six guy and go from there. That's what I would do, where you're still giving your team, a shot in the arm, but you're not kind of killing the future at the same time. And I think you're, doing a bit of both. So, but would I rather be the Habs and have excess firsts and seconds? Sure. Of course. So that's the thing Pierre Dorion left for this franchise in different ways, not just via the trade route, or I guess in a weird way, in different ways via the trade route. But yeah, that's what I would do.
Sounds good. I don't mind that. I don't mind it. It's just, again, like I think you're just dealing with like an extremely congested market where it's like,
Yes,
the
that's the.
laws of supply and demand might kick in, and then you're competing with like the teams like Montreal or Columbus, like teams that have accrued a bunch of draft capital, who might be more willing just to like go make a run, go push for a run. I think that'll be the wrinkle. And
We'll see.
It's gonna be interesting, man. It's the second half of the season. Like I'm looking at Montreal's draft capital right now. Like this year they have 2 firsts, 2 seconds, 3/3, 2/4. The next year they have
They're gonna
1 first,
add
two
someone.
seconds. Like they could potentially load up, and like all their best young prospects aren't necessarily on the team right now. So it's like they're getting incredible goaltending. Like there's been stretches like Montembeau and Dobesch have just played really, really well and carried them through some bad stretches of hockey. But like, I don't know. I feel like on paper, Ottawa's the more talented team.
But that's the thing. Like, even when you add Perron and Amadio, like I think their forward group is really deep. Is it as offensive as you'd like? Probably not, but they're definitely pretty deep. Like if like Michael Amadio was playing fourth line last night, and it made sense. Like I think he's a really good player. So yeah, it'll be interesting. We'll see. And I do think regardless what happens, they're definitely going to be in a playoff hunt in April, like more so than they were in 2 years ago. I think that's clear. The problem is that there's like 10 other teams that seem close to them, like the Rangers won last night. Like everyone, like the Sens picked up a point and they lost ground on everyone around them, essentially, which is
But that
like.
can happen, right? Like I think like, you look at the standings and you see a lot of teams with like negative goal differentials all around Ottawa, whereas Ottawa has a positive one. I think like if the Senators can just like keep that going, I think they're in a good spot because like those teams should theoretically,
The
there's gonna be
one.
lots of ebbs and flows in the season. I think if Ottawa just holds steady and they have a couple games in hand on Boston and Columbus, if Ottawa can continue to pick up points, like they have been of late. Like I think they're going to be in a good spot. Like Columbus has won 6 in a row. I feel like that team's true talent level is like
I
less
think
than what it
Montreal's
is.
8-1-1. Like,
Yeah, I
as good
think
as
if
those teams
like
are, they're not.
no, I think like all of a sudden they'll drop like 4 games in a row. Like even Detroit's won like 8 of their last 10. Like it's,
That's
you
great.
know, I think eventually like those teams will go back to like they'll have a 500 or sub 500 stretch of hockey eventually. They have to,
And
and
the Sens have.
as long as the Senators continue to ride this wave of capturing points, even if they don't deserve to win, as long as they get those runs themselves, where like they'll win like 3, 4 in a row, I think like they're gonna be in a good spot. And I think again, as we alluded to earlier in the podcast, like the schedule should get easier for them. It's just a matter of capitalizing when that opportunity arises.
The last one though, they play Boston twice in the next week, New York. You need to come out of there with some points. Like they can't go 0-3. Like they, I don't think they will. Like I don't feel like this. Like if anything, I think they're better than both those teams by, a bit of a margin. But you need to beat though. You need to win those games. They lost to Detroit last week, but they beat Pittsburgh, who at the time was neck and neck with them. But they've fallen off. But those are the games you have to start winning, those 4-point games, and I think they will. But it'll be a big test this weekend. Beat
Like New
Boston.
Jersey's, yeah, Boston, New Jersey back to back is tough. Rangers in New York is never easy. Boston on the road is never easy. And then you play Toronto and Utah. Utah's a very fast team. Like for whatever reason, I think like some speed teams, smaller speed teams like Buffalo, have given Ottawa problems at times this
Because
year.
Ottawa isn't fast, what?
Maybe that's a theory. Toronto, Utah next week, even though they're both home games, like back to back
I
is
mean,
gonna be
they
difficult.
beat those teams earlier
Then you
this
play
year.
Washington.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, like again, like not easy
No.
games. Then you play Washington again at the end of the month, and then you have Minnesota, Nashville, Tampa twice on the road back to back, and then Florida. Like that's
Just
what
some
leads you into the
killer
break. And
schedule.
if you can get through that, it's crazy that they're going on another road trip like that, though.
Oh,
Like
it's
that's
back to
pretty
back.
impressive.
Isn't it like back to back Tampa, Nashville?
Yeah, well, it goes Nashville, then they play the next. So Nash, or sorry, Nashville's on the Monday, the 3rd of February. Then they play in Tampa on the 4th. Then they play again in Tampa on the 6th, and then they play Florida on the 8th on the Saturday, and that's their lead into the Four Nations.
It's wild.
But then, then you start getting into all the home games and playing lesser teams, and there's
And their
a
home
really.
record, like the thing is that, you look at their strength of schedule. I was looking on, I think it's Tankathon. It's like 24th, like in a good way. So they're the eighth easiest schedule. And they don't just have the easiest schedule, sorry. It's all home games. Like they've played over 20, like they've played like 24 road games. They're like, I think they're 11-11, and I could be off by a game or two, but they're 23, 24 home games already. So that means they have like over 20, 21 home games left. So like they're a better home team this year. Their schedule eases up. As you said, it feels like it's always like, okay, get to the 9-game road trip. And it's like, oh, wait, it's still pretty hard. And it's like, okay, get to Four Nations and that'll be.
Definitely. But like if you look at March, so San Jose opens the month, then you play Chicago on the 5th. They play like teams in their own conference that should theoretically be important, interesting matchups. You got the Rangers on the 8th, Detroit on the 10th, Philly on the 11th, Boston on the 13th, and then they got like Montreal they play on the 18th. They got Buffalo on the 25th, Detroit on the 27th, Columbus on the 29th, and then Pittsburgh. Like those are all teams in the vicinity of the point. So like those are going to be like important 4-point games. And if they can hold their own in many of those matchups, like I think they're going to be sitting pretty as long as they don't give up like loser points or allow those teams to get like 2 points. And then like April's just it's nonstop home games,
Just don't
nonstop
just
home games.
keep picking up points. Like, don't go on a 4-game losing streak. Just keep
Yeah, if you
picking
can
up.
curb those and go on more stretches where you win games,
Yeah.
breaking important analysis, but
No, but it's
curb the
not
losing
like
streaks and pick up
I
more
thought
points.
earlier in the year that the team struggled just to get points. Like they playing like that Vegas game, that Colorado where like they're in it at the end and then they lose, give up a goal in the last like 5, 10 minutes, right? And like, sometimes that happens. Like every team, they beat Detroit, Norris scored in the last minute of the game, and that kind of changed a lot of the fortunes of this team. But just overall, it's like just get like last night I thought it was good. Like Washington made a big push in the third. They held on. They got a point. They could have won the game too, but they didn't, throw away a point. Right. And I feel like that's where this team's kind of changed over the year and those habits of like winning habits in a sense of like, okay, we're not going to just like fold. We're going to hold steady. But,
It's too bad. Like you look at the beginning of the year, you mentioned like the opportunity to capture points is like, I mean, every team could say this, but it's like you look early at those games that they just blew points. Like they vastly outplayed the opposition, but like goaltending let them down or what have you. And it's like, if they captured like the 4 extra points or 5 extra points, they'd be sitting tight. Like they'd be
It'd be
above
like
Tampa.
for
Yeah,
Tampa.
they'd be above Tampa. And you'd be pushing the Panthers, who haven't played necessarily great hockey of late.
No.
You know?
Yeah.
So
They're right there.
they could be in a good spot. Like I think the best part that you can say about this team is they're playing consistently. They have a defensive structure that they're relying on. They know they can win games and hang with anyone down. I think like that's just like that psychological edge that you know if you play your game, you can limit the opposition's chances. It's just a matter of going out and creating your own. I think like that's a huge advantage for this team. Like you know exactly what you're gonna get just from a consistency perspective, and it that I think like the efforts and everything else weren't necessarily at this level earlier in the season. I think like.
No.
This is some of the best hockey that they've been playing of late. And if they can get the goals to go with the strong goaltending and the good defensive structure, I think you're laughing. And I think like having a healthy and effective Thomas Chabot, a healthy and effective Jake Sanderson, if you get them playing well with Nick Jensen and Artem Zub, I think like you're laughing. I that's a top four that you're hoping the 5-on-5 offense will pick up a hair. And then, you know, you just hopefully you address some holes on the roster. And then if you can bolster it just a little bit, give them like a little bit of a push, I think that'd be huge.
You're laughing. You're laughing. I
We'll
love it.
see. We'll see.
I'm
But we got
laughing.
practice today.
I
We have
hope for
practice
Sam's
today in
fans
like an
it's not
hour. So,
laughing like, tears of, anyways. But Graham, I feel like we've, I always feel like I learn a lot when we have our chats. And thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. It's always a fun one. And congrats on all your success going on coming in hot, having a mug now. It's big days. I didn't know you met Mike Tyson. That was really cool. It was like two fighters. I'd probably take you in the ring.
oh man, he's no, not a chance. No, he would kill me.
It's like sometimes I get like people being like because Ian Mendez snapped a picture of me interviewing Kachuk. People are like, oh, like you're like the same size of him. Like, yeah, that guy could crush me. Like
Yeah,
it's
he's large. He's a large, imposing figure. You know, like yeah, he's a big boy.
he's a big boy. Awesome. But Graham, thanks so much for taking the time. Is there anything you want to plug before I let you go or
No, I think I'm good, man. I'm good. I'll see you at the practice in 10:30 right now. I'll see you practice in like an hour.
Yeah. Well, it'll be fun and
Thanks everybody for tuning in, reading my stuff. Really enjoyed chatting with senators and like engaging with the senators committee on online. It's a lot of fun and it's been fun.
you do the best work, man, and I'm glad that
Don't
we've.
know about that. You do great work as well.
Thanks.
Sense content. Sense content's been really fun, man.
It's been really good this year,
It's fun to
honestly.
go to the rink and just like hanging out with you and Julian, shooting the shit, and then it's the vibes have been pretty good, so I can't complain. It's been a lot of fun this year.
Can't complain. We need a playoff run. That's all I ask for. Get
Yeah,
some towels.
100%, man.
Get some towels.
More interest, more views, more fun, more engagement. That's the
It's all about the clicks. That's
dream. No,
why
it's
I'm
not about
here.
the crit.
No,
It's
I'm
about the
kidding.
content. It's about the content.
Exactly. Anyways,
Anyways,
thanks so much for taking the time and doing this, and we'll
no
do this
worries.
again. And okay, I'll see you at practice.
Sounds good. See you in a bit.